35, and all members is present except for one, and that is Senator Calgary will not be with us today. He's away on other state business. We do have present with us senators, three senators and myself, and we have quite a few things that's coming before us today. We have two bills that have been previously heard that we're going to take up before we take the new testimony on Senate Bill 62 and Senate Bill 87. We're going to take up 62 first as a previously heard bill, and that's the infectious reporting, isn't it? Yes, healthcare associated infections. Who's going to speak to that bill today? We've had previous testimony. There's two people signed up to testify. It is our desire to move that bill out today if possible.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman. For the record, again, my name is Doug Letch, staff to Senator Gary Stevens, and pleased to be back before the HES committee to talk to you about SB 62, which we discussed about a week ago, I believe, although not everybody in the committee was present.
Yes, and Senator Davis, for the record, this is Jay Butler, Director of the Division of Public Health. I am also on the line and would be glad to briefly summarize last week's testimony, if you'd like.
I would like for you to do that, Dr. Butler.
Okay, very good. The Senate Bill 62 is a follow-on to a bill that was introduced last session, Senate Joint Resolution 19, which created a working group to consider the issue of public disclosure of healthcare-associated infections. I think everyone is aware of the health burden of healthcare associated infections, as well as some of the challenges in identifying these infections in the 21st century, now that healthcare is oftentimes delivered outside of the hospital setting. The motivations for this movement nationally is primarily consumer driven, a desire for consumers to be aware of possible health risks when they're choosing health care. However, there are a number of challenges to that approach, not the least of which being technical and epidemiological challenges in identifying infections and reporting the data in a way that's going to be useful for consumers. We also have some challenges in Alaska because most of our hospitals are relatively small, and interpretable numbers will not necessarily be available, at least over a short period of time, for the majority of our institutions. The working group looked at the experience in other states. At least 14 other states have passed some type of law requiring public reporting of infection rates within hospitals. Two have passed laws that are much more general, just that hospitals should report what they do to prevent infectious diseases within their institutions, and two have passed laws requiring confidential reporting of infection rates to state health departments. The working group also considered recommendations from a number of professional groups, also from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Healthcare Infection Control Practices Advisory Committee, which does not actually recommend for or against mandatory reporting, but does establish some guidelines for state governments that want to go forward with this, including using established public health surveillance methods and reporting to state agencies in charge of health. Also creating a multidisciplinary advisory panel for a collection of this type of data, which really is the heart of SB 62. The one thing that's a little different about the approach we're taking in SB 62 is We're doing this basically as a pilot and also using the advisory panel to address some of the technical concerns that the working group this past fall had about how feasible public reporting would be within Alaska. And then also this group would decide just what would be reported, whether it be certain process measures such as influenza vaccination rates among healthcare workers or outcome measures such as specific rates of certain infections. And then also the CDC recommends that the loop be closed not just with the public but also with healthcare institutions to make sure that they're aware of how they compare to other institutions. That's a bit of a whirlwind tour, I realize, of several hours of work that a number of people did. And I'd like to thank anyone who's on the line or in the room there that participated in the working group established under SJR 19, and I'd be happy to take any questions that you may have.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Butler. Any members have any questions of Dr. Butler before we take further testimony?
I do.
Yes. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thanks for your work on this, Doc. I'm a little bit, help me out here. What medical facilities wouldn't be required to report under this legislation?
Senator, through the chair, the exact answer to that question would be part of the charge to the multidisciplinary advisory panel, but I would anticipate the type of institutions that would be included would be inpatient acute care hospitals and possibly outpatient surgical centers.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. We do have two people sign up to testify on this bill. Dr. Jay Butler just spoke. Is Pat Luby here? Are you online?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Pat Luby. I'm the Advocacy Director for ARP in Alaska. We ask your support for Senate Bill 62. This is not a gotcha bill. We don't think the task force will try to stigmatize hospitals that have higher infection rates. This is about error reductions. The issue of the medicine recommendations that hospitals be honest so that they can self-correct on errors, including infections. Health professionals are very good about correcting problems, but they need to know the number and the scope of those problems. AARP feels that Senate Bill 62 is a good first step toward reducing those medical errors and reducing infections in the hospitals. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And we'll go back to the sponsor of the bill. Is there any wrap-up that you'd like to give at this time?
Sure, Madam Chairman. The folks in this room know, at least the folks, you were here last week, this bill's not about trying to point a finger at any hospital and say, or any healthcare facility and say, you're doing this, you're doing that. What we want to do is a consumer protection bill, and if this is a way to get there and to get our healthcare facilities to start taking those steps to decrease the amount of things that are preventable, then we think that's great. All of us who and I was working with the advisory group this past or the task force rather this past interim, all of the folks on there put a lot of time and effort into studying this issue either on their own or through their business or in their professional endeavors, and it's a good process. Certainly learned a lot about this myself. Just now visiting my folks down in Florida, and right before session started, noticed lawyers were advertising on the cable channels down there for clients who might have acquired an infection while being treated. So it's getting a lot of national attention, and we think this advisory group approach is the right way to go about it in Alaska, and look forward to everyone supporting this. Thank you.
Thank you very much. At this time, if there's no other questions and no one else to testify, I'd like to entertain a motion to move the bill.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Senator Dyson?
I move that we move SB 62 from committee with individual recommendations.
And they're attached. Let's note that here. Thank you. It has been moved that we move this bill out of committee. Is there anyone not in favor of that? But we won't have to have a roll call if we all agree. Thank you very much. We do have coming up next is Senate Bill 76. To give you time to get in place. Let me take care of some papers here. Senator Ellis.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Johnny Ellis, representing downtown and midtown Anchorage in the State Senate, joined by my staffer, Gabe Aceves. And as the button says, this is the Aspire bill. Yes. It was legislation before us last year and back before us, new and improved this year. The acronym is Alaska's Youth Succeed When People Invest Resources in Education. And I know Senator Dyson is familiar with the legislation from last year and offered his advice about it. This is the bill to allow to challenge the private sector, businesses, individuals, the faith-based community, charitable organizations to help us with the problem of children aging out of foster care and going off into the adult world and some of those souls becoming lost, not having the resources to continue their education to become productive members of society. So some people are calling this Aspire. Some people are calling it the government can't do everything bill. We didn't think we could set up a program to fund the educations of all children who had been in state care or in state custody, out-of-home placements. And so we're trying to figure out a way to set up a structure for other folks of goodwill to donate the money to assist these young people in getting on with productive lives. So that's the basic outline. I think my staff and your staff, Madam Chair, have done a good job of addressing any concerns with technical aspects of the bill. There is no known opposition. There has been no opposition to date. Lots of support. But there is a committee substitute that's before you. Between the last hearing and this hearing, Madam Chair, there was a proposed change from the experts, Office of Children's Services, for the definition in the legislation of out-of-home care. So we can be inclusive of more children in the state of Alaska who have had difficult childhoods and upbringings. So I would commend that committee substitute to you. I think it will tune up the bill, fine-tune the bill as it moves through the process. And with that, I really appreciate you guys having this back before you. We hope to get the bill passed this year with your support.
Thank you very much. I guess we should accept the CS that you have before us.
Madam Chair?
Yes?
I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 76.
It has been moved that we accept this Senate Bill 76 CS, and we've already heard the discussion on it. We took public testimony last week. Is there anyone in the room that's here to testify on this particular piece of legislation? Is there anyone online? Here not. It is my desire to move this piece of legislation out of this committee. Could I get a motion, please?
Chair.
Yes.
As a proud co-sponsor of this bill, I am pleased to move SB 76, Tuition for Certain Children, out of committee with individual recommendations, and I believe a zero fiscal.
Zero. Yes. You've heard that, and everybody agree we will not have to have a roll call. And thank you very much for the work that you've done on this bill. And it goes next to?
On to finance.
Finance.
Thank you very much. You.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate it.
Okay, we'll get to the new bills for today. And we have two bills that's coming before us. House Bill 27, Senate Bill 27, is the bill that we're going to hear. They're both of the same subject matter, so we're going to take them both up at the same time, and the testimony on that bill. I'd like for my staff person, Mr. Overmeyer, to come forward and tell us about Senate Bill 27.
Good afternoon. I'm Tom Overmeyer, staff to Senator Davis. Senate Bill 27 is an act relating to eligibility requirements for medical assistance for certain children, pregnant women, and persons in medical or intermediate care facilities and providing an effective date. The intent of Senate Bill 27 is to make health insurance accessible to all children, women, pregnant women, and Medicaid qualified individuals in these intermediate or medical facilities. And early intervention and preventative care will yield huge savings to the state and costs in the long run. As an enhanced reimbursement program, the federal government pays 70% of the Denali Kid Care program, or about $840 million out of $1.2 billion. I indicate in your package the sponsor statement and the background that about one-third of all children in America get health services through Medicaid or the state children's health insurance program, SCHIP, which is administered in Alaska through Denali Kid Care. In the fiscal year of 2006, the cost of Denali Kid Care was $25.9 million. About $18 million was paid by the federal government. So these numbers are important, but you can see how much more expensive how much more money is involved when you involve all the other people that in this program through intermediate and medical facilities. Eligibility rates in Alaska have been frozen at the 2003 federal poverty levels, and under SB 27, eligibility for persons under 19 years of age increases to 200% of the federal poverty guideline and requires others who qualify and can afford to make contributions toward their coverage. Without Senate Bill 27, by April 2007, eligibility rate will decline to 154% of the federal poverty guideline, one of the lowest in the nation, forcing an estimated 1,000 children off the rolls of Denali Kid Care. Only two other states, Montana and North Dakota, have lower rates. 41 states allow participation by families at or above 200%, and 7 states have rates at or above 300% of the federal poverty guideline. There are still an estimated 18,000 uninsured children in Alaska, or about 9% of the children age 18 and under. Private health care coverage for children has declined by over 30% in the last 10 years. It is estimated that uninsured children with a medical need are 5 times as likely not to have a regular doctor as insured children and 4 times as likely to use emergency rooms at a much higher cost. I bring to your attention on the background of the bill that's in your package that roughly 7,600 children were covered by Denali Kid Care as of December 2006. The cost per child of Denali Kid Care is about $1,700 annually per child, compared to over $12,000 for an elderly person. So you can see where the numbers mix there. And by comparison, private health insurance for a family, a pregnant woman with 2 children, is estimated at $8,000 to $17,000 annually. And in that case, you'd have to have a 20% copay and a substantial deductible with no vision, dental, or hearing benefits. Now, another thing I would like to bring to your attention is, and it's significant, I think, in the fiscal note that is on page 1 of 2 from Janet Clark. It's analysis of this bill, which indicates that the cost in fiscal year 2008 is $930,000. It says this bill reverses the effect of legislation effective September 2003 that reduced and froze the Medicaid income eligibility standard for certain children and pregnant women whose eligibility is managed through Denali Kid Care, and froze the income standard for nursing home and community-based waiver recipients whose eligibility is determined under the 300% supplemental income eligibility criteria. These numbers appear in the bill, and I want to bring them to your attention. The 300% standard for those for that group, and the 200% standard for the others. It's for the children. Prior to implementation of the 2003 legislation, Medicaid was available to children and pregnant women with incomes up to 200% of the prevailing federal poverty guideline for Alaska. Effective September 2003, the income standard was in statute at what was equivalent at that time to 175% of the federal poverty guidelines in 2003. You can see that with inflation, it's dropped to 154%. 1,000 going to drop off as of April, and that is the reason that in our bill, we're asking that this bill become effective immediately, or we will have a substantial loss of coverage to children in Alaska.
Right, thank you. Any questions at this time from members? We have quite a few people to testify, but we're going to hear from the next bill, and then we'll take all the testimony on both of the bills, because they're signed up for 87 and 27. Everybody's signing up for both bills. So will the next sponsor come up for House or Senate Bill 87?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Bill Wilikowski. I'm the Senator for Northeast Anchorage. I'm here with Michelle Seideman, who is on my staff. I make no illusions that she is the brains behind this bill. This is SB 87. The intent of this bill is to make health insurance available to all children in Alaska while asking those families who can afford to make substantial financial contributions toward their coverage. As you heard before, currently Alaska ranks 48th among the 50 states eligibility guidelines for Denali Kid Care. By ensuring that all children have access to health services, this bill will reduce costs to the state and its citizens over the long run. As one of my legislative colleagues says, SB 87 is cheaper, smarter, and more moral than the status quo. An estimated 18,000 children in Alaska lack health insurance, and the number is growing. According to Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, the number of children covered by private health insurance declined by 31% in the last decade. The vast majority of these children are from working families. Uninsured children have much higher health risks than do covered children. They are more likely to develop chronic illnesses such as asthma, diabetes, and to suffer from acute conditions such as eye and ear infections. While many uninsured children lack a regular doctor and don't receive preventative care, they're four times likely than insured children to use emergency rooms when medical attention is needed, increasing the cost of their care dramatically. These costs are borne by other Alaskans. If you look at what the uninsured costs are in Alaska, Providence and Alaska Regional Hospitals provided $89 million in uncompensated care in 2006. These costs are passed on to other hospital users through higher charges for medical services. This causes insurance companies to increase their premiums for individuals and companies that provide health benefits. In response, many companies shift, obviously, these costs to employees. These costs could be reduced by ensuring that all children have access to health insurance. This bill, SB 87, raises the eligibility limit for participation in Denali Kid Care program to 200% of the federal poverty level, currently $27,000 per year for a single parent and child. This change would put Alaska in line with other states, 41 of which allow participation by families at or above this level. It's also important to note that 70% of the costs of this program are currently covered by the federal government. Senate Bill 87 would allow families with incomes up to 350% of the federal poverty level to buy into Denali Kid Care using a sliding fee scale for premiums and a 20% copay. Those with the greatest means would reimburse the state roughly 90% of its costs. Participants would have to certify that they don't have access to health insurance at work, so we don't have a crowd-out situation. With the No Child Left Uninsured Act, as we're calling this, Alaska joins states from Idaho to Illinois that are working to ensure that all children have access to health insurance. Governors across the country are looking for ways to cover the uninsured, from Arnold Schwarzenegger in California to Mitt Romney in Massachusetts. According to a recent New York Times CBS News poll, access to affordable health care is the top of the public's domestic agenda. This poll found overwhelming support for children's health insurance programs, the equivalent of Denali Kid Care in Alaska. 84% said they support expanding the current program to cover all uninsured children. I want to underscore this point. The uninsured are not necessarily poor or unemployed. Middle-class people are one of the fastest-growing subgroups. More than one-third of the uninsured have family incomes of $40,000 or more. Senate Bill 87 proposes to extend a helping hand to Alaskans in that category while asking them to pay their fair share. Of course, one of the greatest challenges of providing insurance for all our kids is the cost. The cost of this bill is not insignificant. However, I believe it's a bargain and a cost saver in the long run. In fiscal year 2006, it cost the department less than $1,400 to provide per child to provide Denali health care, kid care coverage. The department estimates it could cost up to $5.7 million to cover all kids who apply up to the 350% federal poverty level. This represents less than one-half of 1% of this year's surplus. It's an amount I believe we can and should find. I thank you for your time and urge you to support SB 87.
Thank you. Any questions at this time from the members? Yes. Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Senator Davis. In regards to, I was trying to balance out some of the differences between the two bills, and in your bill, and I believe it's Section 2, Paragraph 6, versus Senate Bill 27, which is Section 1, Paragraph 6, which are the basically the same. There was something added in between. That's why I changed the section anyhow. The Senate Bill 27 has language increasing to 300% of the supplemental security income benefit rate under 42 USC, et cetera. Yours leaves in the $1,656 a month. Is that $1,656 a month altered someplace else in the bill? No, it leaves that the same. Okay. All right, thank
leaves
you.
Leaves it the same.
We do have somebody from, sorry, Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And as you said in your testimony, part of the issue is the money. And it is my sense that we are very likely to be in a deficit budget position at the end of the 2008 year, and that that will continue for and be exacerbated for the next 8 or 9 years. Have you all thought about how we should go about paying for this, or what other services the state now provides that we should quit doing in order to pay for this?
Well, fortunately, this year we do have a $1.3 billion surplus. As I said, we are 48th out of the 50 states that provides this amount of coverage. We're probably the wealthiest state in the country in terms of not having any sales tax, income tax, or plus the permanent fund dividend that we do offer our citizens. Other states seem to make do, and other states, 41 have a federal poverty level 200%. Seven have a federal poverty level above 200%. I guess it's just a matter of priorities, and if we're truly going to make children a top priority, then I think we need to try to find efficiencies in government and try to find some space to for this coverage.
Nice move.
Very good.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions at this time? We do have quite a few people to testify on the bill. So we can start taking the public testimony at this time. I wanted to bring the department up if you would like to come forward at this time.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Carlene Jackson, the Commissioner for the Department of Health and Social Services, and I have with me John Sherwood and Jerry Fuller, who are the Medicaid experts that can speak to the fiscal notes and the details. What I would like to say to the committee, first I'd like to thank the sponsors of both bills for bringing these forward. We're very concerned about the fact that the dollar amount is frozen in statute for eligibility for SCHIP Denali Kid Care, and we don't want to have kids falling off, and we also don't want to lose our enhanced FMAP rate for the SCHIP program, so that's very important. You've got different bills before you with different amounts that they would propose raising the eligibility level to, and so we've got folks that can speak to what the differences would be there in terms of cost and number of kids affected. So I will, with that, defer to any questions that you might have for the many fiscal notes attached to this, and let our, as we affectionately call them, Medicaid wonks answer those for you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Elton.
Thanks, and thanks, Commissioner, and Jonathan and Jerry. The question by the senator across from me, at the the assertive senator across from me, is, I think, a question that many people have. And one of the frustrations that I feel when I look at a fiscal note is it's easy to run your finger down the cost column, but there is no savings column. And we heard testimony from one of the sponsors that, to my ears, sounded like if we don't do this, it's like a tax increase because people will be spending more covering the uncovered costs that hospitals are now providing, and it can affect the rates that we pay either as individuals or as employers. And so I'd appreciate some discussion by members of the department on what the potential savings are. I mean, we know what the costs are, but what are the potential savings if we provide medical care to needy individuals at a time before it becomes crisis care, for example?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, I'm not sure that we can put a dollar amount on that. I'll again defer to these guys to give you that. But I will agree with the sponsor of one of these bills that prevention dollars, which are primarily what Denali Kid Care funds, will make a difference in what other costs would have cost us down the road if we didn't put the money into prevention. It's very difficult to say what you didn't have happen because of what you put money into. So I'm not sure that we can quantify what prevention actually saves us, but they may have a better answer, and so I'll defer to them.
All right, thank you. Take your pick.
Through the chair, Jerry Fuller, Medicaid Director. I don't intend to be flippant, but an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. We could probably pull up some studies done in other states that might give some indication of the dollars saved for an immunization or something like that. But off the cuff, it'd be better not to try to speculate.
If I could follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes, you may.
Just, I mean, you're the professionals. I mean, and I won't press for a dollar amount on savings, but am I wrong in assuming that future savings are going to exceed costs of the program? I mean, can you narrow it down that much?
Through the chair, for the record, this is Sean Sherwood. I think one of the difficulties we have narrowing it down is the savings don't necessarily accrue to the state. The cost of providing for the uninsured and the cost of illness and treatment in absence of prevention is borne across the population. It's not just state programs. It's private pay. It's private insurance. It's the state employee insurance. We know preventative measures save us money. The most well-known statistic is in prenatal care, that it's what, one for every dollar spent you save four. Just who gets those savings is really the difficult part. And the way we do fiscal notes, that it's really based on where our funding level is now. We know healthcare costs are growing in general. So in one extent we're as opposed to saving money, we are reducing our future increases. So I mean, I think that's the challenge for us, trying to put numbers to it.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I guess, yes. I feel somewhat more comfortable now knowing that I can say that investing this money now is going to save us money down the road, and three of the top policymakers in the department will not be able to challenge my assertion.
Thank you very much. I'm still waiting from the department to see. I see you have quite a few fiscal notes on here, and I don't know if you have some statement that you want to make concerning them. To be truthful, this is not the Finance Committee, and that's where you're going to really have to go through those fiscal notes, because what we're basing it on at this point is what the need is. We know that it needs to be. This is helping social services and education, and that's the part that we're going to be dealing with. And yeah, we appreciate the fact that you have the notes here. I'm not necessarily interested in you having to go through each one of them separately by me. Now, what they want to do up in finance, that'll be a different scenario for them to deal with. If you have no other real statements to make, I'll start taking just the regular public testimony.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. And back to Senator Elton also, if need be, there's lots of information that we can bring forward at a later time based on what other states have done that are now providing full coverage for all their children in their states. And they speak to where the money was saved and where it went and how it was utilized, what went back to the state. There's lots of information out there. At this time, we'll start taking the public testimony. We have Dr. David Alexander. Are you online or?
Yes, indeed. Hi, I'm Dr. David Alexander, pediatrician here in Anchorage.
Yes.
Am I coming through all right?
Yes, you're coming through okay. Fine.
And I've been now retired for a year and a half. I'm still the chair of the state MCAC, which is the Medical Care Advisory Committee that specializes in Medicaid issues and regularly reports to the Commissioner of Health and Social Services. There's no question that the 2003 cutback in the coverage by our state's SCHIP, which is the federal state health insurance plan, which in our state is called the Denali Kid Care, has vastly increased the number of uninsured children. Many of our uninsured kids do manage to get their immunizations at various free immunization clinics, but unfortunately, many do not. And very few of these uninsured kids get any routine health exams. At those routine visits, the child is evaluated to make sure everything is developing properly and the parents get lots of questions answered and are given advisory tips on child rearing. But without those visits, all of that is missed. Has the state legislature managed to save some money by its cutback and on the Denali Kid Care funding? Sure. But the state as a whole has had a vast increase in expenses since the loss of insurance has caused a fourfold increase in children visiting hospital emergency rooms and often getting admitted. And then all of the expenses of that free care that they receive results in the cost spreading to all others in the state. In addition, since the federal government has been covering 70% of the SCHIP expenses in the states, our state's cutting back on its funding of the Denali Kid Care has resulted in a vast loss of federal funding for the health care of our children. Furthermore, those kids who don't get their routine health care visit are statistically noted to miss a lot more of their regular school attendance. And we must remember that children in families with low incomes really often do require more continuous help at our schools in order to succeed. Could we require that families purchase insurance? Sure, like Massachusetts has done. But our legislative proposal to offer allowing families to buy into our Denali Kid Care program, perhaps paying on a sliding scale, is surely more effective than trying to require commercial insurance. Some exact numbers I have not been able to track down, but I have been informed by many people that insurance companies use about 35-40% of their insurance payment income to cover their overhead expenses, whereas various government health programs use only a little more than 5% of the money for their expenses. Therefore, government programs can provide about 50% more health coverage for any matching amount of funding. So supporting the new proposal will improve health care for the kids, improve their ability to attend school, and actually greatly decrease the health expenses of the whole state. Thanks and good luck.
Thank you very much. Any questions? All right, the next speaker would be Theda Pittman.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman.
Hello, Theda.
Members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Theda Pittman. I live in Anchorage, and I'm a civilian in this subject matter. But I do pay federal income taxes, and a portion of the general fund, which is generated by oil revenues, comes from my oil. I'm in favor of increasing the number of children and pregnant women who meet the income standards under Denali Kid Care. I also favor a modest copay for those in the upper levels of eligibility and a buy-in option for those not otherwise eligible. I'm also in favor of expanding Medicaid eligibility to people in medical or intermediate care facilities. To reconcile the differences between the two bills, I urge you to adopt the more generous features of each. We want to encourage strong, healthy families, and we aren't doing that if our poorest children can't get health care. I urge you to support these efforts to improve Denali Kid Care. Thank you.
Thank you. Regan Matterly. Regan?
Hello, okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. My name is Regan Mattingly, and I'm the State Affairs Coordinator for the Alaska Primary Care Association. Alaska Primary Care Association represents 24 healthcare organizations and 115 nonprofit community health centers, as well as other safety net providers throughout Alaska. In 2005, our sites provided primary health care to over 80,000 patients, of whom 23,258 were children 18 years or younger, while 6,566 of these children were enrolled in the Denali Kid Care Program. Alaska Primary Care Association supports increasing the income eligibility requirements of the State Children Health Insurance Program, also known as Denali Kid Care. Alaska Primary Care Association knows that lack of health insurance compromises the health of the uninsured because they receive less preventative care and are diagnosed at more advanced disease stages. Alaska Primary Care Association knows that children covered by health insurance are much more likely to receive preventative health care services than children who are uninsured. Increasingly, the uninsured are more likely to be hospitalized for an avoidable condition or problems that could have been prevented had a person received the appropriate and timely outpatient care. Alaska Primary Care Association knows the importance of health care access for children of Alaska and Alaska, and understands the value of preventative care throughout a child's growing years. The segment of population that both Senate Bill 27 and Senate Bill 87 address is currently medically underserved due to the unusually high and growing healthcare costs in Alaska. Restoration of the Denali Kid Care income eligibility to 200% of the federal poverty level is a priority for community health centers, and the expansion of this program could significantly increase the access to healthcare for nearly 18,000 uninsured Alaskan children. Children from low-income working families who cannot afford health care still need health care and deserve the access. The children of Alaska are the future of Alaska. Alaska Primary Care Association supports the health and well-being of Alaskan children and supports increasing the income eligibility requirements for Denali Kid Care. We appreciate your hard work and service to Alaskans and support your efforts to expand the access of health care to Alaska's children. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any questions? Hearing none, I'll go to the next speaker, Tammy Elder.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee for giving me this opportunity to testify. I have the grand privilege of working with grandparents raising grandchildren throughout Alaska, and I would like to tell you how this bill will impact them.
Before you start, would you state your name for the record, please?
It's Tammy Elder. And I work with Volunteers of America, the Grand Families Network Project.
Thank you.
I have a friend, and to protect his identity, I'm going to call him Davey. Davey's a healthy, wonderful six-year-old right now. But when his grandparents got him at 3 years old, he had four rotted teeth at the beginning of his mouth, had received no immunizations, and had significant behavioral difficulties. Thankfully, his grandparents were able to access Denali Kid Care and was able to thereby get his four front teeth pulled out so he wouldn't be in pain and screaming and not eating. We're able to get his immunizations up to where they needed to be, and we're able to put him into mental health care. Without Denali Kid Care, they would never have been able to do that, and Davey would not be quite the happy, wonderful six-year-old that we all know and love. And while most grandparents raising grandchildren will receive Medicaid, those who adopt their grandchildren must qualify for Medicaid or Denali Kid Care under their own income. And given the current levels of income for qualification, many of these grandparents do not qualify. they cannot afford to place them on their own private insurance, they still have it. And for those 65 and older who are counting on Medicare for their medical insurance, do not even have medical insurance to place their own grandchildren on. In these situations, the grandparents must choose whose health care gets first priority. In my experience, the grandparents always choose the grandchildren. And they'll put the grandchildren's health needs ahead of their own. And grandparents do not have the ability to do that, considering that their own high risk for their own health care concerns. The Senate Bills 27 and 87 would enable this small group of grandparents who are raising their grandchildren to ensure that they do not have to choose whose health is more important, and will make sure that everyone's health is taken care of. And I really ask that you consider how this will impact this growing population of Alaskans. We're growing by 50% every 5 years, the number of grandparents raising grandchildren, and they're drastically affected by genetic eukaryotic medicine. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? We're going to go from online and come here and call on George Brown, Dr. George Brown.
Madam Chairman and committee members, I'm George Brown. I live in Douglas, Alaska, and I'm a private pediatrician. You have a copy of what I have prepared, but I'd like to read that for our audience and those online.
Right.
Today, I feel like Yogi Berra said, this is like deja vu all over again. As a 20th century Alaskan, it is proper to give credit to many of my pediatric and public health colleagues and friends that made Medicaid and SCHIP possible for what many families know as Denali Kid Care. One of the key and tireless promoters is Dr. Ken Moss. We worked together in the Anchorage Native Hospital for 3 years, during the time Senator Ernest Greening represented Alaska in Washington. Thus, I'm reminded of his book, Many Battles. Senator Greening understood, as did many of the founding mothers and fathers of our beloved Alaska, that we must, like our Alaska Native friends and colleagues, take the long look. He and they understood that children are our human future. Many of the medical and scientific minds of the early 20th century understood this clearly. Dr. Emmett Holt, widely respected professor of pediatrics, wrote in 1913, "The problem of infant mortality is one of the great social and economic problems of our day. A nation may waste its forest, its water power, its mines, and to some extent its lands. But if it is to hold its own in the struggle for supremacy, its children must be conserved at any cost. On the physical, intellectual, and moral strength of the children today, their future depends." Dr. Holt was referring to a report from the newly formed U.S. Children's Bureau. The key finding of this report was the direct connection between infant mortality and poverty. Infant mortality rates for families with incomes over $1,250 was 60. Remember, this was in 1913-15, compared to 170 for those with incomes under $450. Measuring human infant mortality rates is rather like the warning canaries in coal mines. They are critical indicators of national values. Senator Edward Kennedy testified recently in support of finding the $60 million to consider federal child health insurance. How the U.S. spends less for health care than all the other industrialized nations. We rank 24th of 25 among industrial nations in infant mortality. While both U.S. and Alaska infant mortality rates have gradually declined over the last 30 years, they remain higher among minority populations, that is, those families living in poverty. There is good news resulting directly from both state and federal support of child health insurance. From 1997 to 2003, there was a 30% reduction in the number of uninsured children. Children covered under Medicaid and SCHIP receive better health care in four ways. One, they have a regular source of health care, what we pediatricians call a medical home. Two, they use preventive and primary care in cost-effective ways. Three, they receive dental care. And four, they less often miss needed care despite living in families who otherwise could not afford such care. There is a further public benefit from this state and national investment in children. Children with such access to preventive and primary care are less often hospitalized. Senator Kennedy stressed his concern for our future, echoing the prophetic words of Dr. Holt. Economic and social changes that force both parents to work just to pay for food, mortgages or rent, and heat, the basics of survival, mean such families have no health insurance. These families keep working, and their children keep waiting when ill with bad coughs, asthma, or severe vomiting, diarrhea, out of fear of the $150 to $300 emergency room cost. These are the working poor. They hold two critical characteristics that influence our state and national future. One, they are parents of millions of 3-year-old to 10-year-old children. And two, they have no health insurance. Senator Murkowski recently spoke of the crisis in decreasing access to health care for elderly Alaskans. Some primary care physicians refuse to take Medicare patients because they cannot afford to. We are in danger of the same for Alaskan children if we do not increase SCHIP coverage to more than 200% of the poverty level. Our national newspaper, USA Today, is reminding the public about this looming crisis for kids. And online, on March the 3rd, there was the headline, Kids Face Cutbacks in Health Coverage. And just yesterday, USA Weekend featured 15 important findings parents must know right now. I want to stress that such public understanding of child needs is the engine that drives parents, both Medicaid and SCHIP eligible, to use these valuable preventive and primary care services. These are both the least expensive and the longest lasting investments we can make for our children, for all children. I want to go back to your question, Senator Elton. I remember several years ago researching how many dollars you save or how many dollars spent in prevention. If you put education and health, and particularly in early education and early health care all together, the figure that was determined by experts looking at this was that for every dollar you spend, you save almost $6. In health care, particularly in prenatal care and immunizations, it's between $3 and $4 saved. So there's no question it's cost effective. I want to close with this quote from a Superior Court judge who requested anonymity. She's from Fairbanks, and she clearly describes the importance of insuring all children. Quote, each of us must come to care about everyone's children. We must recognize that the welfare of our children and grandchildren is intimately linked to the welfare of all other people's children. After all, when one of our children needs life-saving surgery, someone else's child will provide it. When our children dial 911, someone else's child will answer it. When our children need a helping hand, someone else's child will be there to lend it. If one of our children is threatened by violence, someone else's child will be responsible for the violent act. The good life for our children can be secured only if a good life is secured for all other people's children. I do have the sources of the quotes that I made in what I've handed you, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much. for your written statement and also your oral statement. Is there any questions? Thank you very much. We allowed him to read the full text. That was the first speaker that we had here in the room, and we have many more, and we all have to be out of this room at 3 o'clock. So we don't have very much time left. We are going to cut down on the amount of time that you have for your testimony. And is there anybody here that's speaking against this bill? I want to give you an opportunity to do it now, because I think most of all the other people in present are here to speak in favor of the bill. Anyone else that want to speak against the bill? I'm going to, at this time, call on someone else from here. Walter Majonis?
Majoris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Walter Majoris, for the record, and I guess I'm wearing three hats today. I'm the Executive Director of Juno Youth Services. I'm the President of the Alaska Association of Homes for Children and the Vice President of the Alaska Behavioral Health Association, so I'm representing all of those organizations. And I want to talk specifically about the impact of in the relationship between Denali Kid Care and Children's Behavioral Health Services. And when I say behavioral health services, I mean mental health and substance abuse services. At Juno Youth Services, we work with seriously emotionally disturbed children and families, and so these are kids that have serious behavioral and emotional and mental and chemical dependency problems. We serve over 700 children and families a year. I wanted to speak in strong support for both SB 27 and SB 87, and wanted to talk to you real briefly about the role of Denali Kid Care in the Alaska Children's Behavioral Health System. One thing that many people don't realize is that Denali Kid Care is the main way that children access behavioral health services in the state of Alaska. It pays for probably about 80 to 90% of the services that are provided to children for behavioral health. It's not like the adult system where there's quite a bit of grants. There's very few grants that are available for children's behavioral health. Predominantly, the system is funded by Denali Kid Care. So as Denali Kid Care eligibility threshold goes down, you see less and less kids in Alaska receiving children's behavioral health services. As you know, as everyone in the legislature knows, because you're all proponents of this as well, we now have an important initiative called Bring the Kids Home, and it just stresses that we have inadequate behavioral health services in the state of Alaska now, and that's why many kids are going to receive services in the lower 48, and why we need to build our services in the state of Alaska so more kids can stay closer to their homes. We need for Denali Kid Care to be able to reach as many children as possible to be successful with the Bring the Kids Home initiative, but actually we're seeing just the opposite. I wanted to say about the experience of Juno Youth Services as an example. Historically, 75% of our clients were on Denali Kid Care. This last year, that percentage is down to 69%, and I expect that it's going to continue to go down further and further if the eligibility threshold stays where it is. So the result in our agency is that less children in need are receiving services, and our wait list is increasing. Right now, I just did a count before I left the office, and we have 37 children and families that are on the wait list that don't have access to Denali Kid Care at this time. The statewide experience is the same. We're seeing the same kind of trends. We're seeing children, less children, or many children without access to behavioral health services because they are not qualifying for Denali Kid Care, particularly for those kids who need community-based services. And often what happens is they'll default to state custody, or they'll go to higher levels of care, like intensive residential, where they can access Denali Kid Care. But it really forces them to the most extreme level of service provision until they can get, services. And this is very much affected by the stringent Denali Kid Care eligibility criteria. It was said by many speakers before, our program has the third lowest eligibility threshold in the country. We're now, or as of April, will be down to 154% of poverty. And we're also seeing a big decline in kids covered by private insurance. As you know, several states are taking active steps now to expand their Medicaid children's health coverage, and I believe it's critical and support your efforts for Alaska to follow in that vein. And I urge your support for both bills, and please help ensure that as many Alaska children as possible have access to basic health care so that we can invest early in children's health and prevent more serious problems later on. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. At this time, I'd like to call up two at a time. I'm going to ask for Carol and Nancy to come up, please.
Hi, my name's Carol Lee. I'm a parent and a grandparent of a child with children that are, have been on Denali Kid Care. And if we didn't have it, I don't know where I would be, and I don't know where my kids would be at this time if I didn't have it.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Nancy Davis, and I live here in Juneau. Thank you for allowing me to speak in support of Senate Bill 27 and Senate Bill 87. I am here as the Vice President of the Alaska Nurses Association. I am a registered nurse and have been one for a lot of years, 27 of those in Alaska. The effort of both of these bills to restore health care coverage to children and pregnant women in Alaska who live at or below the 200% of federal poverty level is a return to the progress that our state was making in past years to assure health care for low-income residents and their children. The Alaska Nurses Association is strongly committed to the improvement of health standards for all Alaskans and improving the availability of health services for all people. We passed resolutions in our general membership assemblies in the last 3 years actively to advocate for improvement of health services for Alaskans. Senate Bills 87 and 27 are steps in the right direction for Alaska. I think that it's so apparent that when in 2003, when the enrollment was reduced due to the more stringent income limits, there were about 10,500 children on Denali Kid Care. Now we hear that there are 7,600 children on Denali Kid Care. Many of those parents that lost coverage were working for marginal wages in our state. They at that time they could rest easy knowing that they could meet the medical needs of their children. With losing coverage in this day and age, now 6 years down the 3 years after the reduction, I think it's really not progress. Families did not get richer. In fact, all of our cost here in Alaska, especially cost of fuel oil and gasoline and transportation of goods, and yes, health care, all of those costs have risen. So we are really falling farther behind in our commitment to a healthy Alaska, healthy children, and healthy families. We are not a poor state. We have people who are struggling to live here. We are not a poor state, and we have only, less than 700,000 citizens to really care for. I think that we could be a model for assuring health care coverage for pregnant women and children in our state. In fact, when we first rolled out Denali Kid Care in this state, we were a model. We were the number one state in the nation for enrollment impact, and that's because families in Alaska really needed that coverage, and they appreciated it, and they participated in it. I think we did better than everyone else at that time. I believe we could do it again for Alaska's children and families, and the Alaska Nurses Association stands poised to help and support these efforts. Thank you very much.
We're going to go to Kenai at this point and call on Debbie Stanford.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Debbie Stanford, and I'm the Operations Director for Central Peninsula Health Centers. I'm here as an advocate for the under and uninsured population in our community who receive medical and dental care at our community health center, Central Peninsula Health Centers. Of the approximately 4,000 kids within 200% of poverty level in this community, our community health center served 2,996 children under the age of 19 in 2006. As you are all aware, the target population of our community health center is the under and uninsured. In our dental center alone, 19% of the kids served in 2006 reported household income in the 151 to 200% of poverty level range. Although we offer a sliding discount for this population, some families may find health care for their children, even offered at a discount, to be a barrier to care. Please support the health of our children by restoring and enhancing coverage to our working poor. Please support Senate Bill 27 and Senate Bill 87. Thank you.
Thank you very much. George, rather than me call your last name, I'm going to have you to, I'm back to Anchorage now. George is AARP.
I kind of thought that's where you were back, Mr. Senator. Thank you. This is George Hieronymus.
Yes.
And I am here today as a volunteer, as the volunteer state president for AARP Alaska. In my regular job, I'm the chief operating officer and senior consultant for the 4-Acre Group. But I'm also a very, very proud grandfather of a 5-year-old girl who was born here in Alaska in 2001. Her single mom had a job that did not meet poverty standards. So my granddaughter qualified very luckily for our Denali Kid Care. She received excellent prenatal care, excellent care in the hospital, and wonderful, wonderful postnatal care. And to the best of my knowledge, she has never been to the hospital, to the emergency room, for earaches, colds, or anything else, because she has her own pediatrician her mother can take her to get the care like all of us who are insured can do for ourselves. So I really appreciate what Denali Kid Care has done on a personal basis. On AARP's behalf, our 89,000 AARP members in Alaska are concerned, of course, about the health care of our children and our grandchildren and everybody else's grandchildren. We stand in strong support of this effort to return Denali Kid Care to the previous eligibility levels, as well as to enhance the program to allow more children and pregnant women to buy into this coverage. Ensuring that children have affordable health care coverage is a priority for all of us who care about our children and our grandchildren and who care about Alaska's future.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Janice Tower?
Yes, hello. My name is Janice.
Are you there?
Hello, I'm sorry. I have to push the button. Yeah, this is Janice Tower.
Yes.
And I represent the American Academy of Pediatrics Alaska chapter. I'd like to thank Drs. Alexander and Dr. Brown for their very informative and eloquent testimony. I want to keep my comments very brief because I don't think I can add much to what they just said. I do represent 88 pediatricians across the state of Alaska. And Dr. Brown is right. This does feel like Old Home Week because I think the people that I'm looking at in this room as well as here online are those same individuals that advocated strongly for the passage of the Denali Kid Care Bill originally. In 2003, to see the eligibility level reduced, which has effectively taken it below 175% down to 54% in April. It's a step in the wrong direction, and we highly support bringing that back up to its original level of 200% and allowing families to buy into health insurance. I think that the emergency room is a terrible place to deliver primary care. Pediatricians would much rather see children in their offices where they have access to medical records and can see the total picture of the child. I think we really need to start thinking and seeing children as children rather than cost. And for this reason, I highly recommend on behalf of the pediatricians in the state to support SB 27 and 87. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Janice. Patricia Sanner.
This is Patricia Sanner. I'm also with the Alaska Nurses Association. The comment I wanted to add, I was very excited to see in Senate Bill 87 that they were beginning to expand this program to allow individuals to contribute as well. Nationally, there is a growing debate as to how best to address the issue of providing health care for Americans. There is an increasing awareness that paying for health care needs to be a partnership between individuals, employers, and the government. We applaud the sponsors
especially with Senate Bill 87, we're beginning the debate in Alaska as to whether we can create such a system where individuals and families can pay part of the cost of health care insurance based on their income level. Starting this experiment with children, we think, is a very wise step. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Clover, Simon, Simon.
For people, for pregnant women and for children. Living in poverty without access to health care is one of the main indicators for poor health outcomes in children, and in terms of prenatal care can have lasting effects for the babies that are born. Increasing the eligibility level back up to 200% of the federal poverty level will allow children to get preventative health care while they are young, reducing the long-range Medicaid costs. I also applaud the inclusion of a sliding fee scale for families who are just above the income level. And this provision will ensure that all children in Alaska can get health care coverage they need. And as the health care costs rise, Alaska can take this important step of setting the standards for preventative health care for children, ensuring our children are healthy will reduce health care costs for the future. Thank you very much, and we support both of these bills.
All right, thank you very much. We're back in Juneau here, and I'll call on Karen Robinson.
Good afternoon. Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Karen Robinson, and I'm here today testifying on behalf of the Alaska Women's Lobby, which has I represent around 3,000 individuals from Barrel, Nome, all the way down to Ketchikan. And I want to start by saying, from the Alaska Women's Lobby standpoint, these two bills are the most important bills you have before you this year. We know ethics and gas pipeline is also important, but we believe this stands right there at the top of a bill that you need to make sure gets through the legislature. As Dr. Brown said, again, deja vu, when these programs were put in place, we were ecstatic, dancing in the streets, getting out information, getting as many people signed up as we possibly could to really get good care out there for pregnant women and their kids. We were just as saddened, and we're one of the few groups here fighting really hard against the changes that took place in 2003. And we're obviously extremely happy to see the fact that we maybe will turn back the clocks again to where the poverty level should be. I just want to end with kind of a very real story, and I guess with all of us aging and having grandchildren and those sort of things, we all kind of have stories to tell these days. But I'll tell you about a young family. And this young family had just started a business, a very small business here in Juneau, and me as grandma got a phone call one day, and Dad had insurance, but it was only your very basic Blue Cross. As a young man, he was really in a serious car accident and has to have insurance because of no kidney, no spleen. Young mom, at this point, had no insurance. When I received the phone call that she was expecting, it was worried, distress, concern. They were paying off already a $15,000 doctor bill. How were they going to do it? And when I told them that they probably qualified for Denali Kid Care, Mom went in immediately, and what was stressful and painful and hard turned to joy and delight. And today we have a wonderful grandson who's 5 years old, and interesting hearing about Dr. Moss. Dr. Moss was the dad's doctor when he was little. Dr. Brown now is the grandson's doctor. And because of this wonderful program, this family was able to, Mom now has a good job that has good benefits, Dad has benefits, the son is going to a nice school, and with not having to spend, he was breached, and so their hospital bill came to around $25,000. And instead of having to spend the last 5 years paying off a $25,000 bill, they were able to save the money they needed to buy a nice home, and I think have a really stable, good life, and are together today because of it. And I truly believe that the Denali Kid Care made the difference in this family. Thank you. Support both bills. Hope that we can do anything we can to get it through this year. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's go to Fairbanks. I have Val and Ben.
They're here. They left.
Is that not Fairbanks?
Oh,
they left. Okay. They're not here. Let's go to... Patricia Groman.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman.
Yes.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Patricia O'Gorman, and I'm a registered nurse and have been an advocate for healthcare access for children for the past 30 years in Anchorage. I currently work for the Anchorage School District as the program coordinator for the Child in Transition Homeless Project, and I would encourage you to vote for SB 27 and 87 to make health insurance accessible to all children in Alaska. Most of the homeless children in the program meet the current eligibility requirements. However, my past work, both as a staff member and a board member at Anchorage Neighborhood Health Center, has made me very aware of the significant need to expand this program. These are families who are above the income threshold and qualify most often for the Anchorage Neighborhood Health Center sliding fee. These are families who live paycheck to paycheck and struggle often with the decision about when to seek medical care for their children, hoping symptoms will resolve themselves, sometimes delay in health care. The consequences to this can be an increased risk to the child's health, both short-term and long-term, and cost to the medical system more in the long run. I would strongly encourage you to support the expansion of Denali Kid Care with these bills. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's go back. Did I call on John Sherwood? Did he testify? Okay. Chip Wagner.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Chip Wagner. I serve as executive director of the Alaska Conference of Catholic Bishops. We would like to go on record as supporting both of the bills relating to Denali Kid Care. We note that approximately 9.2% of children in Alaska are uninsured, according to the Kaiser Commission on Medicaid and the Uninsured. We also were very active in 2003 in opposing the changes that were made to the Denali Kid Care program. The two changes both related to eligibility. The first reduced the percentage of the federal poverty level, but the second, which is more onerous in many, many ways, capped it at the 2003 federal poverty level guidelines. The effect of that is that we are, and by the way, we are the only state, to my knowledge, that has capped eligibility based upon an older federal poverty level. It's according to the American Academy of Pediatrics, which has a website that lists all of the eligibility criteria. We're the only state that does that, to my knowledge. But the effect of it is, it kind of gets lost. People don't think about it, but our eligibility criteria, because of the cap, continues to decline, while all the other states, even if they have a lower eligibility level, theirs continue to increase. So ours goes down and everybody else's increases over time. And I'll give you an example of how this can happen. In 1959, the minimum wage in Alaska was $1.50 an hour. At 2,000 hours, that's about $3,000 a year, which interestingly was the same amount that a legislator made as their base salary, was $3,000 a year. Now, if you look at the minimum wage, you will find that the purchasing power has dropped by 31% for a minimum wage worker. For a legislator, I might add, it's increased by 15%. But leave that to one side. What happens when you cap things and don't provide for indexing for low-income people is their purchasing power goes down, and they're the people that can least afford it. So if you do nothing else this session, please remove the indexing cap based on the 2003 federal poverty level and keep it consistent. And then there was just one technical point with regard to the bill, which I might add is not the fault of the sponsors. It was the fault of previous legislative drafting. And that is that the bill cites OMB poverty guidelines. And the OMB, Office of Management and Budget, at the federal level, does not establish the federal poverty guidelines. This is a technical point. They are the ones that must approve the definition of poverty. But then it's the Federal Department of Health and Human Services that actually has to develop, using that definition, the guidelines that we use for implementing this program and many, many other programs. And I'd like to cite from the Federal Register from January 24th, 2007, Volume 72, Number 15, if I may, real briefly.
Yes, you may.
And it said, due to confusing legislative language dating back to 1972, the poverty guidelines have sometimes been mistakenly referred to as the OMB poverty guidelines or poverty line. In fact, OMB has never issued the guidelines. The guidelines are issued each year by the Department of Health and Human Services. The poverty guidelines, and this is what might be in the statute, the poverty guidelines may be formally referenced as the, quote, the poverty guidelines updated periodically in the Federal Register by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services under the authority of 42 U.S.C. Section 9902, paren 2, close paren, close quote. Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Here, no questions at this time. There's a Mariko from Anchorage.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, member of the committee. My name is Mariko Sell. I wish to register the support of the Alaska Public Health Association for expanding Denali Kid Care to more children and pregnant women in Alaska. As an affiliate of the American Public Health Association, ALPHA has consistently supported broader health insurance coverage for all and especially for children. Healthy Alaskans 2010 sets the target for 2010 of having all children insured. The ALPHA board has not had time to compare the two House bills. However, we would support broad coverage for children and pregnant women, and we encourage whatever program implemented be simple to administer. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone in the audience that I did not call on that want to testify? Is there anyone online?
I would like to testify.
Would you come forward and give your name for the record, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Amy Devereaux. I live in Anchorage. Yes. I recently took a job as an administrative assistant, and my monthly salary put me $148 over the household income cap for Denali Kid Care, which was providing medical care for my 9-year-old son. In order to add him on my insurance through work, it would cost a little over $300 a month. I support increasing the income limits to 200% of the federal poverty level. I also support adding a cost-sharing option for families that are just above the income limit. This would allow families like mine to provide health care coverage for our children without being penalized for working. This added support will allow families across Alaska to raise healthy children and continue working toward a better future. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much for your testimony. That would complete the public testimony, and we've had extensive testimony, and I want to thank everyone for your testimony, and if there's any questions coming from the committee, I'd like to have them at this time. It is my intention to convince you that you should pass this to finance, because I do believe that the three of us support this bill, these bills. They are both good bills. One, of course, we would love to have full coverage for all our children, if possible. As you can see, either one of these bills might have some problems with passing out of our finance, so we would like to send both bills up there and hope that they would at least look at these bills and come up with a way that we can improve the system that we have. And we don't care whose bill take precedence. It could be 84, it could be 27. It doesn't matter. I want to thank all of you for coming and follow this bill. And when it gets up to finance, I would like for you to start calling and signing up and getting ready for the testimony, because that's where the battle is going to come. Can I have from the committee a motion to move this bill?
Madam Chair, certainly you can, but a question first. I mean,
yes.
Would it be appropriate to move a conceptual amendment that changes the definition of poverty level as being established by OMB? And I think we could do it in a conceptual.
We could do that
in a conceptual way. And is it in both SB 87 and if I could, and perhaps Mr. Wagner could leave the language with committee staff.
We would get with them when the meeting is over.
Madam Chair, I'd move a conceptual amendment to SB 27 that changes the language that defines the federal poverty level and ask unanimous consent.
Do I have a unanimous consent?
You do.
We do.
And Madam Chair, the same motion for SB 87 and ask unanimous consent.
Do we have unanimous consent on SB 87? Hearing that we have unanimous consent, we will move these bills out of HESS and send them to finance with the changes that have been suggested, along with the attached numerous physical notes that we have here.
Madam Chair, do we need a motion to move the bills as amended?
Yes.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move SB 27 with attached fiscal notes as amended. Ask unanimous consent.
It has been moved that we move both bills out of the committee with the attached fiscal notes. Maybe we'll just have a roll call. It might just sound good to do that.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move SB 27 as amended with attached fiscal notes.
Will you have a roll call, please?
Senator Elton?
Yes.
Yes.
Chair
Davis?
Yes. Madam Chair, I move SB 87 as amended with attached fiscal notes.
It's been moved that we also move 87 with attached fiscal notes, and let's call the roll on that one.
Senator Thomas?
Yes.
Senator Elton?
Yes.
Chair Davis?
Yes. That would complete our business for today. We thank all of you for being so attentive and staying until the meeting was over.
Madam Chair, you did good work. That doesn't happen.